Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Today, we're going to be talking about raising EB5 capital from a developer's perspective, particularly why it's different and why it's important. And for that, we have a very special guest. But before we introduce you to that person, I'd like to bring on your host, Mona Shaw. Mona, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm very well, Mark. How are you? And how's everybody?
I am doing great. And I'm sure the person listening is happy to hear your voice as well. Because if I was left here by myself on this topic, well, they wouldn't learn very much. But I know they're going to learn a lot from you. And you have a guest for us.
Yes.
So if you could, introduce us.
I will. I'm very excited about this because we have Mark today with us, a very experienced New York real estate developer who's going to really shed a lot of light in this area. And I know our listeners will be really eager to listen to what he has to say. So I would like to introduce Robert Friedman. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Mona. Hi.
I can call you Bob, right?
Please do, yes.
Bob, do you want to describe yourself a little bit?
Sure. I'm a real estate developer, third generation real estate family in New York City. Our grandmother started us in the real estate business in the 1930s, and my brother and I are continuing the business. We are owners, we are developers, we are managers of residential buildings in Manhattan. That is our prime focus in business, although we obviously do other things.
Wow, that's amazing, Bob. And for many of our listeners who are thinking of EB5, they know about EB5, maybe you're an attorney, perhaps you're an investor, the insights that somebody with the experience that Bob has can give is invaluable. Don't you agree, Mark?
Oh, certainly would agree. I can already think of a few questions I have, but before jumping in, I know you've got a lot of thoughts, so I'll let you run with it.
All right. Bob, we're here about EB5, and you've used EB5 funding in the past, correct?
Correct, yes. Right. Very happily.
I believe it was to raise funding for the first glamour project in New York City, which was the Times Square Hotel.
Yes, it sure was. We were pioneers at the time we started that project.
Right, that was back in 2010/2011. It's been at the IA-29 stage, which means it's the final stage. And that means is that almost all of the petitioners who filed, all the investors who filed in the project have got their permanent green cards.
Yes, that's correct.
How far has the project progressed, though? Because I know it was this huge, we know all about this huge hotel in New York. I know about it because we were the ones who were on the project.
Right. Well, it is the Times Square Hotel. And it is right in the heart of Times Square. We're very, very excited about it. We are now in the stage of constructing the structure. It was a very, very complicated foundation. Unfortunately, we had to spend like about 6 or 7 months just in foundation. The contractor was great, and he did all that we requested, but it just takes a very long time when you dig a big foundation in a small area. We expect the structure to be finished by this coming summer, and we expect to open the building the first quarter of next year.
Great. I remember, though, I recall there was a little controversy in the middle because of a delay in the project, which really was not a delay at all. Rather, it was enhancement of the project, but it just didn't come out that way.
Exactly right, Mona. What happened was a very good turn of events occurred. Right when we were ready to give out contracts and to start, which was that an adjoining owner of a property on 41st Street and 9th Avenue contacted us and said, I know you're building the hotel right next to me. Why don't you buy my property and expand the hotel? So we looked at that. We went over it with the architect, with the engineers, and we determined that it would be an excellent benefit to the project to buy the corner property. So we sat down with the gentleman and we negotiated a deal, but it was a very complicated deal because he didn't want to sell outright. He wanted to keep some retail space. So we had to negotiate that in the building that we built, we would have to build him 8,800 square feet of space and give it back to him in the form of a condominium document. Well, as you can imagine, when the attorneys got hold of this concept and this approach, they had a field day. And they spent months and months in negotiating the agreements that took the principals about an hour and a half to sit down and knock out. But we did get a little bit delayed because of working out the legal formalities of getting a very complicated deal done. But at the end result is there were multiple amount of benefits to us in doing that transaction. We know it delayed things, but it was all for the good.
Right. Bob, you bring up a lot of issues here, because when people do go into EB-5, at this point, real estate projects are at the forefront. I think 95% of projects are real estate. People do understand real estate as being a more solid type of EB-5 project. They understand real estate as being, you know, you have your bricks and your mortar there, and therefore it's you can see it, you can feel it, it's not going anywhere. But that isn't always true. I know that your hotel is fantastic. It's phenomenal. It's one of my favorite projects. But there are a lot of projects out there which aren't the same. I mean, there are so many EB-5 real estate projects where there are real problems with the real estate. Don't you agree?
Well, yes. We've always seen cycles in the general economy and also in New York City real estate. Now, by far, the vast majority of EB-5 investments made in real estate is for new condo development. And as we know, new condo development is subject to cycles. I always say you buy in one market and you sell in another. But just by definition, you buy in 1 year and it's not until 2.5 years later that you go to market and start selling. So there's always a risk of cycles in condominium sales. And we always have the cycles. My dad used to say that if your timing's right, you're a genius. And that is true in selling condos. It's a big risk because you never know the market that you're going to hit when it comes time to sell.
Yeah, and where that is important is not necessarily in the EB-5 petition section where you're showing where the jobs come in. You can produce the jobs so you can get your green card, but it's important when it comes to getting the repayment of your investment capital. And a lot of EB-5 investors obviously are looking at projects where they can have some kind of good feeling. I can't really say guarantee, but that their investment capital is safe. So in a project like that, like a high-end condominium, which there are plenty of right now in New York City, would you say capital is safe?
Well, it actually depends upon your point of view. You know, as I said before, Mona, who's got the crystal ball to know what the condominium market will be 2.5 years after you make your initial investment? If the market turns out to be stable and thriving and in an upward movement, yes, everybody will be happy and everybody will be repaid. But if the market gets slow and sales get slow and prices go down, and that always happens together, it never really happens, and this has been my experience, it never really happens where prices, where sales are slow, but you can still sell at a price. Because what I have always seen is that when sales are slow, when you reduce the price, it doesn't pick up the velocity. Because
That's
sales
right.
are slow for
yeah.
a reason.
Yeah.
And it's because the buyers just aren't out there. So you can reduce the price 5, 10, 20%. But you're still not going to make the sales that you need in order to pay off all of your obligations. And that is always uppermost in our mind. My brother and I feel as though when people lend us money, it's as though it's our money. We have the same proprietary feeling towards repaying the debt as the holder of that debt, because we only want to be associated with successful projects. We only want to be associated with happy projects. Thank God up to now, that's all that we've had.
You know, Bob, when I do a lot of lecturing on due diligence, especially when I go overseas, people ask me what to look for in a project. And I say exactly what you're saying, that, you know, a lot of things are a crystal ball, especially real estate. We're going to be in Dubai shortly, and Dubai market understand because they had a property crash. The Chinese market haven't really had that property crash yet, so they haven't really experienced. But one of the things that I do say is experience matters. Good management, good developers, that's essential. You get somebody who's doing it for the first time, they have no idea.
And we've lived through all those
yes.
markets. I mean, we've lived through markets where We have sold, this was in a co-op apartment that we did, a conversion that we did, where in the first day that we opened the sales office, we had 30 signed contracts. I mean, it was crazy. But we've also been in a situation in 08 and 09 where we were selling condos and it was a very slow market. And that's how I know from experience that if you reduce the price, it did not increase the velocity of sales. So you just have to have patience. You have to have capital in order to carry, and you have to be creative. In other words, what we have done in slow markets is we've given purchase money financing to buyers. Buyers who at the time couldn't qualify for mortgages because banks were shutting down, we would say, okay, we'll take back a mortgage. We'll do it for 5 years. We'll do it for 7 years. And we'll give you bank rates in order to bridge the slow market. And when the market gets better, which it always does, when the market gets better, then we will. You'll refinance us out. You'll go to a bank and you'll pay us off. And that's exactly what has happened. And every mortgage we took back in 08 and 09 in order to facilitate sales has been repaid to this date. We don't have one outstanding mortgage.
Wow, that's fantastic. But the point I often make, Bob, and I think you would agree with me, is that EB-5 is usually a five-year cycle. People do think that they can try and get their money back from a project within 5 years. Good real estate may not necessarily, it may be keep your money safe, but it may not necessarily mean you'll get your money back in 5 years. If the price is not right, you're not going to refinance and you're not going to sell.
That is 100% correct, Mona. If you hit a slow market, the developer is going to have to come up with more capital in order to carry all expenses that are incurred until the market gets better and you can make sales. And you have to have a developer that would be willing to take back paper, meaning take back a mortgage, meaning that they don't get their cash. And they may even have to come out of pocket a couple of dollars in order to get the unit released from the first mortgage and to pay off EB-5 investors. So it all depends on the market and it all depends upon how strong the developer is.
Wow, yeah. Well, that's been our experience over the years. There's quite a few projects now where they've got to the stage of 5 years and they really aren't at the level that they can pay back their investors. It's not that they don't intend to and there's zero fraud. It's just that they cannot afford to. So the investors will have to wait for year 7, 8, or 9.
Again, when your timing's right, you're a genius.
Yeah, exactly. But that brings me to another point because there are other types of projects on the market other than just real estate developing. This is a topic that we are going to be bringing up over and over again. In these podcasts, you know, the types of EB-5 projects, and it doesn't have to just be real estate. And it's really wonderful to hear what we're going to hear from a developer's perspective like yourself with so much experience in real estate. But I'm going to ask you the question, have you raised capital for any other projects?
Well, we haven't raised capital, but we're in the process of raising capital.
Right. And are these big real estate developments in New York City?
No, as a matter of fact, they're a little bit astray from a New York City condominium or rental apartment building.
Well, I'm quite excited about your projects. I think it's probably good if you explain the name of the projects. They're more or less the same, but they have different names.
Right.
I'm glad you asked, Mona, because I was very curious. I realized it doesn't sound like it's real estate. It's definitely not in New York City. It's like you're hinting at something. Can we talk about it? Yeah. So let's hear about it, Bob.
Well, the first one I'd like to mention is in Orlando, Florida. More people come to Orlando, Florida, be it business or leisure travel, than any other location, certainly in the United States and maybe in the world. Last year, they announced 62 million visitors to Orlando. So it's a tremendous opportunity to capture the business traveler and the leisure traveler in order to do things in when they have the time available. Given that's the fact, we undertook to build the world's tallest roller coaster in Orlando, Florida. When I say world's tallest roller coaster, what it is it's a vertical tower that is going to be almost 600 feet tall. And around the vertical tower...
Are you feeling sick yet, Mark?
Well, I'm just trying to not state the obvious joke with an immigrant-invested 600-foot roller coaster. But let's hear more about it, Bob.
There you go. So there's going to be a... there will be tracks that go around the tower. Sometimes the car will go clockwise, and then it'll do a loop, and then it'll go counterclockwise. It will go straight up the vertical tower, and then when it gets to the top, it is pure gravity taking the car all the way down to the ground. It'll be a four-minute ride, and it'll be the most thrilling, exhilarating roller coaster ride in the universe. And I say that with all due modesty because we have had professionals in the roller coaster industry just be in awe of what we are building.
Wow, well, so that sounds amazing in itself. But if I could just take it away from the fun glamour and just bring it down to boring EB5, on the EB5 perspective, it's a great project, Bob. You have created so many jobs, direct and otherwise. You're pushing the economy up in areas like Orlando and the second part of the polo, it's called the Polar Coaster, right?
Right.
In Atlantic City. Atlantic City as well has had its fair share of problems. So you've got the elements of EB5 there. But what the investor might really ask about is that, okay, I can see where you are creating jobs. I can see that it's good for the economy. But will I get my money back on a project like this more than I would in a real estate development?
Well, Mona, that's a great question. And the answer to the question is, look at the past when the United States has had recessions. When the recessions have occurred in the real estate industry, it has not affected the leisure time industry. Disney's numbers were up in 08, 09, 2010. Universal Studios numbers were up during that period. They may not be up at the same rate as before or after, but they were up. So the bottom line is that people and families still want to be together, they want to travel together, and they want to have good times together.
Well, in fact, the argument perhaps is, Bob, that in a recession, they probably travel out less and will go and do local stuff more.
Yes. Instead of taking the family in an airplane and paying for the cost of four, five, or six people in the family to fly, they'll get in a car. And they'll drive for 10 hours or 12 hours instead of paying the cost for the for an airplane. But the point is that they do what is necessary in order to be together, in order to be a family, and in order to enjoy times together. And that's what we bring, or that's what the leisure industry brings, and that's what we will bring in Skyplex in Orlando and in the Polar Coaster Amusement Park in Atlantic City.
Bob, you're an extremely experienced developer. What are, you can tell us some of the maths involved with the payback. There's an investor who's interested in a project like this or another developer who's looking at a project like this.
The best way I can is by people.
Yes.
Your income is directly related by the number of people that you can attract. The Orange County traffic study predicted that we will have 4.4 million visitors a year to Skyplex.
4.4 million, wow.
4 million visitors a year. We believe that it will be, people will know Orlando as Disney, Universal, and Skyplex. We believe that after we open and after we're known to the public and around in the United States and around the world, that we will supplant SeaWorld as the number three attraction in Orlando. So the numbers that we used were 2 million people because we said, okay, the Orange County is predicting 4.4 million people, but let's see if the numbers work at 2 million people. So we did our business plan on our numbers based on 2 million. And at 2 million people, the numbers are, it's just off the charts how much money can be made in Skyplex.
So it's basically a cash-generating project. Again, Mark, so then you see this is a very different type of EB5 project, but in the way it's not. It's one of your cash-generating EB5 projects. There are other cash-generating EB5 projects out there, but you have to see which ones are more likely to generate cash than not. And an investor who's coming in and looking at a project would need to see what is the likelihood, what is the location. Well, you can't beat Orlando. And on the East Coast, Atlantic City is a fantastic location. Then you have to see that with the attractions, are they just mediocre attractions? And you could just hear from Bob, these are amazing. They're not mediocre attractions at all. So the likelihood of a project like this being successful is pretty high.
Yeah, I'm certainly grinning ear to ear because everything you're describing sounds great to me. But big picture here, we're really talking about an EB5 investable opportunity like Skyplex or like projects like Skyplex, which are cash generators. So the big picture here, the exit strategy for the EB-5 investor, unlike a traditional real estate, which would be to hold on to it and sell when the market's right. And sometimes, as you indicated, you have to wait for that. Or, you know, maybe there's some type of event that you leverage a bank in order to get the investors out, or maybe not, depending on those sorts of situations. But this is key because you're not really creating a space, an object, a brick and mortar. What you're doing is you're creating an experience, and you're monetizing that experience across, well, obviously a number of people. You're generating a lot of cash, and in that cash, you develop the mechanism in which to pay back the investors. So that's the big picture here with the scope of EB-5. Am I correct?
Yes, you're more than correct. What in order to give you the full answer, I want to go back a little bit and just tell you a little bit about the ownership team that we have for both projects. We are generational people. We are long-term owners. And that's part of the reason that we were attracted to both of these investments, because we want to own these properties for the long term. We want to own it for the next generation and the next generation. And I might add that the first property that my parents bought was in 1947. And I am proud to say my brother and I still own that property today. So that will give you a sense of how generational thinking we are. The exit for the EB-5 investors will be, as you said very eloquently, Mark, cash flow. And when we have the cash flow, we will go to a bank, an institution, and we will get a long-term mortgage. And from that long-term mortgage, we will pay off our construction loan, and we will pay off all the EB-5 investors. And the ownership team will have long-term stable ownership of the asset, which is what we want and is what our ultimate objective here is, to have a quality asset that we're going to be proud of, that we're going to love to own, we're going to love to operate, and we're going to pay off everybody in 100% of what they are owed.
So, Bob, let me ask you this. I realize that you are an experienced owner and developer with regard to real estate projects, and you mentioned at the top of the interview that you are very happy with EB-5. What specifically about the EB-5 program do you really like, and how does that perhaps set you apart or differentiate you from, say, other developers that don't leverage that program?
Well, what it does is it enables projects to get done. And I think that is the biggest reason why EB-5 has been such a success. It takes the pressure off the banks and the financial institutions in the United States to loan to developers the money that they need in order to build out the project that they have. So what it does is, if you think about it, Mark, it creates a more stable financial system in the United States, because the banks don't have to lend all that is required in order to get a project built. In other words, it becomes a joint venture, if you will, between the banks and the EB-5 investors in order to get a project done. To me, that is the hallmark of the program and why the program is so successful.
I like that. Thinking of it as a joint venture between the investors and the banks, in this case, foreign investors and the banks, and really having the flexibility to get things done. You need cash now. There's mechanisms through EB-5. You need to pay back investors. You can use mechanisms through the bank, or perhaps cumulative cash flows through a cash cow program like you've mentioned before.
Exactly. And the banks get what they want, which is a steady, predictable, secure return, because they're not lending all the money that's necessary for the project. They're only lending some of the money. So they get what they want, which is security and a very, very, very high likelihood of being repaid. What the EB-5 investors get is their green cards. They qualify for the program and they get a secure investment, and where they can make some money, where they have the great, great likelihood of being repaid. And in addition, they get their green card. So everybody gets something out of the partnership.
It's a win-win situation. That's why I love EB-5.
It sounds like what I'm hearing, Bob, is you really like EB-5 because it takes the pressure off getting things done, because you maintain more flexibility, because your traditional bank debt to the overall project value ratio, I mean, that remains low. So it remains you more flexible to do things, whether it is hold out longer for a higher selling price, or put phase A in front of phase B. Is that a good synopsis?
Absolutely, Mark. And I must tell you that in our experience, as Mona said before, we were one of the first that actually did an EB-5 program and closed an EB-5 program. And at the very
In New York City, yes.
At the very onset of this, when I called up a couple of banks that we know and do business with and explained to them what we're doing with the EB-5 project, the initial reaction was, what is EB-5 and I don't want to get involved? Because it was just a natural reaction of people in the banking system of not knowing what the program is and not wanting to extend themselves to learn about it. Well, now, of course, it's a different universe. Today, in 2016, every bank knows about EB-5, and every bank in some way or another has been involved in an EB-5 project. So you don't have that situation. But at the very onset, we did. And I remember one banker telling me from a very major national money market bank telling me that the board of directors would never approve being involved in an EB-5 project. And of course, that's all different today.
Bob, 2016, we are still facing the possibility of the increase from 500 to 800,000. It might happen this year, may not. It's an election year, may happen next year. What do you feel, what's your outlook for the year?
Well,
you're going to hammer on with raising capital for these two projects?
We're hammering on. As you happily say, my feeling is that if it's a good deal for an investor at $500,000, it'll be a good deal for an investor at $800,000. Happily, there are lots of people that want to qualify for the program, that have the capital necessary, that have the desire to obtain green cards. So I really don't see a raising of the minimum threshold to $800,000 as being any sort of serious impediment to the program.
Great. Thank you.
Bob, thank you so much for sharing with us your developer's perspective on raising EB-5 capital.
Thank you very much, Bob. It's been a pleasure as always.
My pleasure. Enjoy the day.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Or call the office at 212-233-7473. Don't worry about trying to write all this down, as it's already embedded in your podcast player of choice. The contact information and other valuable resources can be found there. I'd again like to thank Robert Friedman for coming on today's show and discussing with us the EB-5 program and the benefits from a developer's perspective. We got to hear what EB-5 investment can really do for America, not just through job creation, but the actual benefits of the projects themselves to the United States. But investments are only as good as, the money you get out of them. So next week, we're going to be talking about EB-5 exit plans that actually work. Make sure you don't miss it by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.